Welcome back to the Pot of Greed.
Welcome back, indeed. Today we've got a special sort of bonus episode for you guys. This is what we call
emptying the Pot of Greed.
That's right. So basically what we wanted to do is take a lot of the viewer submitted questions for the Pot of Greed that we have not gotten to answer, because we only do about four per episode and they come in a lot faster than we can get to them. Because we actually needed to take a break week anyway, we've got a lot of like moving around and stuff going on and sort of restructuring. We decided to just record this episode where we answer a bunch of user questions.
So this is going to be more Yu-Gi-Oh! Than you guys are really used to. I apologize in advance.
Yeah, or maybe there will be other topics and stuff as well, who's to say. But yeah, so we picked out a bunch of questions, and we're going to answer them. But first,
put your wands up in chat if you're here for the premiere.
That is right. If you're watching slash listening on YouTube, we'd certainly appreciate a one in the chat. Maybe drop a like even, because that shares it around on YouTube and all that stuff. And speaking of that, we've got a review.
What they got to say.
You know, if you're ever listening to this, feel free to give us a 5-star review. This is from Jesse. So, best Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast. Hey, Paul and Alec. Jesse from Yu-Gi-Oh! Commander here. I've always loved the podcast, been watching since episode one. It's been great getting both of your perspectives on all the subjects you bring up. Every time you guys bring up domain format, the Discord for the alt format loses its mind. Hope to play someday. So, yeah. Well, first of all, thank you, Jesse. Appreciate it. Appreciate the positive words.
Shout out to that domain format Discord.
Yeah, domain format seems like it's kind of the, for those who don't know, it is the sort of Yu-Gi-Oh! Commander equivalent format that fans have made. We hope to be able to try it one day.
Yes.
It might be a little bit difficult. It might take us some time.
Just bear with us.
Yeah, just bear with us. But we do hope to make it be able to happen one day in a form that is like, looks good, presents it well, gets all the rules right, because we're known for cheating and like almost every duel
we cheat on accident.
And we have our own little set of like, you know, video channel restructuring things that we're going, like kind of doing right now. So hopefully we can get around to it. We're not trying to just, you know, snub you guys. I do know domain format's one of the, kind of grown to be the thing I hear like the most about in terms of all formats, like formats.
As far as fan formats go, I mean, Konami has adopted Edison and Goat themselves. So domains, that's really it.
Yeah. Domain, there's like Trinity format as well. That's one that I've
always
heard
about Trinity format.
Yeah, so there's a few, but yeah, domain format seems cool. Thank you again for the review. We will try to get around to it. And of course, if you guys ever want to leave us a review wherever you listen to the Pot of Greed,
please do so.
Please do so. We will not say no to such a thing. Awesome. So we've got questions to answer. A lot of them.
How many do you think there are? Give me a ballpark number.
A lot of questions. We're just going to kind of run through them.
Let's do it.
So here's the first one. I'm bringing these up on the tablet because we don't have the clear cards because we are bad at this. Okay. Do you think that Konami is running out of possible design space under the game's current mechanics? I think you've mentioned in the past that Konami is probably hesitant to add another hyper-efficient summoning mechanic. So what else could they introduce potentially in a new Master Rule set to spice things up?
Woo.
Yeah, man. I mean, just to answer the basic part of the question, I think that it feels like we're running pretty tight on like design space, what archetypes can do, what the limits are being pushed as like, is what you can do with these different mechanics. You got something?
Yu-Gi-Oh! Is, we've hit such a complexity point with the game. Mm-hmm. We've already kind of, we've been hitting that limit to what you can expect players to actually be able to do.
Yeah.
And like comfortably, and how do you present it on camera for tournaments and have judges judge over.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that Yu-Gi-Oh is a type of game where we're ever going to get anything like out of game, like a second extra deck or like some dice token sort of thing. But I mean, like when I look at the mechanics in place now, like how you can summon a monster, how cards can be removed, it's like we had destruction, then we had cards that just sent the thing to grave. We've had targeting, now we have non-targeting removal. Cards can be banished, now cards get banished face down because like banished was not a permanent enough solution to kind of deal with stuff.
And now we're putting them in a spell and trap zone.
Yeah, now like putting monsters in the spell and trap zone is like its own type of removal. And you know, they're getting independently summoned from the spell and trap card zone. And, like, technically you could argue, well, like, Crystal Beast did that back in, like, 2006 or 7 or whatever.
But now, like, there's, like, 7 archetypes
that now do. There's, like, yeah, loads of archetypes. You got, like, Centurion do it, Snake Eyes does it, and, you know, there's other examples, too. I think it's cool because we get so much variety, and Konami always surprises me with how much they're able to take this finite set of rules and, like, this finite play space and still just expand it. One example I have is, like, actually Pendulums. Pendulums, since they're nerfing, have kind of, they've managed to use the Pendulum mechanic in creative ways, like with Valence, where it's less about being Pendulum monsters and more about the fact that
they can be in the spell
and trap zone. They can be in the spell and trap zone and have, like, two effects and then move from that zone to a call, to a monster zone, you know. So there's a lot going on, but do you feel like we're running out of, like, ways to summon a monster or
something? Oh, most definitely. I mean, we've summoned monsters with 3 cards, 4 cards, 2 cards, 1 card. I mean,
yeah, we've shuffled monsters into the deck. We've banished them. We've, like, bounced them to hand. Like, there's just so many things that I don't know. That I think the question is, like, right. I think that we're kind of running out of design space. And
I think Konami's probably going to start moving backwards. That I think we're so going too. To start revisiting older, like, mechanics that just didn't kind of work during their time, and then they're going to make them work with something, a new archetype.
Something I would even add to it is that I think that to add on to the fact that the design space feels kind of crunched, there's 2 other things. The first is whenever they make a card, like, say, a bonfire, just an easy example, right? A card that, like, searches a certain thing.
Mm-hmm.
It limits future design space. So it's like now, because of something like a bonfire, or let's take maybe Original Sinful Spoils Snake Eye, that spell card.
Yeah.
They now have to be careful of every level 1 fire monster they make.
Yep.
Or, like, every kind of pyro. So sometimes if a card can, like, summon a thing from the grave or search a thing, then now, like, every future thing has to be made with that in mind. That happened with, like,
dragons, for sure.
Dragons. I feel like they had to make
worms. Especially level 7 dragons.
I feel like they had to make worms to nerf dragons. Or not nerf dragons,
but, like, so they can make new dragons.
New dragons that don't benefit from old dragon support.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's sort of a thing. And there was a second point I was going to make about it. I think that the pace of like, the pace of play is also what makes this design space feel so stretched so thin.
Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is, like, okay, I think it'd be really cool if, like, contact fusing with, say, Gladiator Beasts, where they would shuffle themselves back into the deck, was pretty novel because, like, they still had to fight in the battle phase. So right. They had to, like, do battle, survive, and then get to the very end of the battle phase. And then at that point, they would, you know, shuffle themselves in and summon another Gladiator Beast. But I think that if something like that was introduced today, it would just literally be monsters that just, like, once they're in the field, they can just boing right back into the deck and, like, do something. And so with Glads, I feel like the mechanic doesn't wear on you so hard because, like, it's still an extended duel. The duel is still going to take several turns. And, like, they're just doing a small attack with one monster, bouncing it back, and then maybe next turn 2. And so it takes its time, whereas now, like, I feel like I don't even always get to appreciate the Valence mechanic because really they're just using it to turbo out some warm bodies and make an Electromite or a Beyond the Pendulum or whatever and, like, just make a huge board out of it. And now the mechanic is gone because it's just been replaced with an Opelousa and a this
you
and
can
a that, you know.
Gauge mechanics by what phases are mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
So right now, well, not right now, but right before Tenpai came out, we were in a main phase 1 format where the only phases that mattered, draw, standby, main phase 1. All the work was done right there. If your deck needed to get to the battle phase, main phase 2, or end phase, it was not relevant. It did not work. To some extent, that's still true for today. Tenpai like to play in the battle phase, but they also say your opponent does not get to do anything in the battle phase. So in a weird way, we're still in a game where all relevant effects have to be able to happen by main phase 1. Cards that say, I do something during the end phase. Cards that say, at the end of the battle phase,
there's no time to wait. That's the thing. Like, there are creative stuff like there's creative stuff like that. But it feels like with Yu-Gi-Oh! We rarely have the time to, like, to wait. Mm-hmm. Stuff's got to kind of be instant. And, like, another good example might be, like, Centurion. Like, Centurion has a really cool mechanic of, like, the monsters kind of becoming continuous traps. It's a little different than being continuous spells. Because it means their effects are quick effects, and they typically provide some protections maybe while they're back there. it's neat, but ultimately it kind of just all gets erased when their real goal is to make like a Hot Red King Calamity and just lock you out and then kind of be done. Like, the novelty wears off fast. So I agree with you that maybe they could start regressing some. And like, if you can slow the game down and then slow the rate that the gimmick or mechanic works, then I think we can appreciate it more.
Right. I'm trying to think of what's a mechanic they could revisit that just didn't work at its time, but maybe we can do it again, but good.
Yeah, like, stuff that comes to mind is usually stuff from the GX era, where archetypes were getting their start, but clearly just, like, Cloudians and their cloud counters, or fog counters. The Venom monsters with, like, Venom Swamp, where every turn you get the counter, it slowly reduces the monster's attack, and then once it reaches zero by a Venom counters, then the monster gets destroyed. But obviously, like, that would take quite a while. Like, 5-6 turns, potentially. Or even, like, you know, Cyber Darks have gotten, like, some more modern support. So, Crystal Beast. So, I would like to maybe see A counters with aliens. That's another one, right? Yeah. Where, like, you know, you try to put the A counters on opponents' monsters, so they'll lose strength. But, like, none of that matters, because when your opponent's linking everything away, the counters are leaving. And just a simple attack reduction rarely means anything. So I think it's not, like, I think that the design space problem could at least be temporarily held off by just slowing things down so that this stuff gets space to breathe. And then you can also, like you said, walk backwards and look to old instances of it, you know. Would be pretty cool. Anything else on that you're feeling?
I feel like we said a lot on that.
Yeah, okay. Well, next question then. In your experience, was Edison format liked in 2010 as much as it is now, or did it only become popular in retrospect?
I will defer to you, Paul, because while I did play Yu-Gi-Oh! During 2010, it was so casual, I didn't know what a YCS was.
Yeah, so I have a part of this question that I'm going to defer to you later. But for now, I will say, as somebody who played in 2010, I started playing competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! In about late 2009, let's say. I experienced this format, like, as it was happening. I remember when, like, the Machina, you know, structure deck came out. I remember all these cards. They were very intimately familiar with me. I remember Gladiator Beasts. I remember Vayu being a pretty hot new thing at the time. All that stuff. You know, the Frog deck. So, what I would say is that I think people were enjoying, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! A lot back then. Mm-hmm. In fear of maybe sounding like too much of a, like, nostalgia goggles Yu-Gi boomer, I think that, like, people were very happy in 2010 with Yu-Gi-Oh! I felt a sense of wonder and just enjoyment and intense love of the game from people that, dare I say, we don't get today. Like, it feels like everything now is, and I promise I'll get back to the question, but it feels like everything now is tense. Everything in Yu-Gi-Oh! Feels tense. I think a lot of it maybe has to do with, like, the internet maybe, or, like, kind of the hyper-fast nature of development now, where, like, people have figured out, like, sets and stuff before they release, combos before they release. Like, things don't feel like they are original ideas kind of flourishing and developing over time. It's like, oh, well, we already know what the Fiendsmiths are going to do to the game. We knew 3 months ago or whatever. So, yeah, and, like, we've made a video recently, I don't know if it's out on the channel yet, but we were, like, ranking the different Yu-Gi-Oh! Eras of the TCG.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people, I think, would agree that, like, 5Ds kind of felt like the peak Yu-Gi-Oh! Era. Kind of just, like, for the anime, for, like, the cards, the card pool, the way the game was played. So, getting back to the question, I think Edison format was pretty liked in 2010. Like, I don't remember major complaints. If anything, I would say that, like, the format right after it's when things started to crack. That's like Infernity's first coming out, and they were really, you know, long combo kind of deck. X-Saber is getting a bit of a power spike because they got like Dark Soul and stuff. Frog FTK was like also that was like a sort of a thing. So I think people liked Edison. Like I think that the reason maybe why it got popular in retrospect, I don't know if I could point to exactly why. Like, it feels arbitrary. Like, there are technically people who like playing 2011 format. That's like a little niche thing I've heard rumblings about. Some people like the Tengu plant format. But that's where I was actually going to defer to you a bit. Because you actually have played more Edison format than I have, in the sense that, like, you've played it as a snapshot. Like, you have an Edison deck built today.
I have two Edison decks.
Oh, two?
I do.
Okay, what are your Edison decks? And
Zombies and Gadgets.
So why did you want to try it out?
So Edison was right before I got back into Yu-Gi-Oh! Mm-hmm. And so, so we're playing casually. This is back in my community college days. A lot of what we all liked and a lot of what people were still bringing to college were these synchro era decks. And even when I was in high school, while Edison format was going on, you know, we had a Black Wings player. This was a time when everybody and their mother like loved Yu-Gi-Oh! Even if they didn't play Yu-Gi-Oh! Currently, they still loved it. It was still like the game that all the like negativity and some of like the hatred that you get nowadays just was not there back then. Yeah, and
that's so true.
And there are a lot of cards that are beloved that I want to be able to use again, but they have no place in the modern game. I got into Edison because I wanted to play with Goblin Zombie again. I wanted to play with red, yellow, and green gadgets again. I want to use some of my favorite cards. And there's finally a format where they're not just, you know, playable. They're actually pretty good. And
you get to... Sorry, was that...
And like, and I think a lot of people have that exact same feeling and inspiration.
Yeah, I would also say, too, one benefit to Edison is that you get to play these decks in the form that they were like kind of their base forms. So, mm-hmm. like, what I mean by that is, like, technically, you can play Gladiator Beast today, Lightsworns today, and, like, Gadgets have even gotten, like, support. But it's all, like, that the postmodern Yu-Gi-Oh! Era support. Where, like, Gladiator Beasts are no longer even interested in getting to the battle phase and fighting because they're just... They have a couple link monsters, and you can force out fusion monsters, and like you can loosely do the battle phase thing. But like I played against a Gladiator Beast deck not that long ago, and like when I got dropped to like Platinum and Master Duel, and it's like you make Editor, and you make Domitianus, and you make Heraclinos, and I say make, but really Editor is just using its effect to cheat them out of the extra deck. And you lose the DNA. Like, there's no... Yeah,
the actual glass. Game plan of the deck is completely different. They try and circumvent as much as possible.
Same with Lightsworns, even. And this is coming from somebody who, you know, I like what they did with the new Lightsworn support. I think they mostly managed to kind of keep the Lightsworn feel, mm-hmm. but it's still so expedited. Like,
oh, it's insane. Just, you're going to deck out in two turns.
Yeah, it's so expedited. I mean, like, Weiss as a card is great for Lightsworns, but, like, Weiss and like that little Judgment Dragonling. Yeah, Lightsworn Dragonling are just they're so like autoplay. And I'm not saying that as like a bitter thing, like, oh, it beat me and I'm salty. I'm saying like it's so fast. You're not in phase milling with Lila or Lumina or anything. Like Lila and Lumina, there's no in phase mill.
It is funny. Lightsworn was an end phase deck years ago. Now by the time you get to your end phase, it's done.
Yeah, you should have like extra deck monsters and stuff out. You know, it kind of reminds me actually legitimately of like the first question where the design space has accelerated so fast. So it's mm-hmm. like you're not even getting the time to mill on your end phase.
Raiden increases its attack for every Lightsworn you mill.
But really,
it never mattered. I never attacked with Raiden.
Exactly. So, but sorry to get back to the Edison part. Yeah, I don't think it just became popular in retrospect. But it did become popular in retrospect. It was popular then, and then it's also...
When we went to TCGCon, and it's a convention of just a bunch of different card games, a lot of people there weren't Yu-Gi-Oh! Players currently. However, when they heard about the Edison tournament, a lot of them got excited because there was a format of Yu-Gi-Oh! That they could play where they didn't they didn't feel... Like, they weren't terrified of all the modern cards. Like... Going back to 2010 is actually a nostalgic time for most people. Most millennials right now think 2010 was a damn good year. And if I tell you we can play 2010 Yu-Gi-Oh! To just a Joe Blow on the street,
I'll give it a try. Listen, I fear that this questionnaire episode is going to end up getting a little ranty on my part because I'm not lying when I say Yu-Gi-Oh! Feels... a little fucking miserable today. Like, fuck it. I'm a Yu-Gi-Boomer now. Because I'm so sorry. Edison format like when I was playing it, I was enjoying Yu-Gi-Oh! Say what you want. Maybe it's rose-tinted goggles. Maybe it's just because I was like younger at the time and just kind of had free time. So every weekend I could just play Yu-Gi-Oh! All I wanted. But I really and truly think it was like a prime time of Yu-Gi-Oh! There was so much passion, so much like the game. So like it had its identity. This postmodern Yu-Gi-Oh! Is like, it's stressful. Everyone's angry about everything. Card design feels like it's like moving at a breakneck pace. We've gone from tier zero format to tier zero format to tier zero format. And like everyone's jaded and angry with Konami. It's not to say there aren't good things that come out of Yu-Gi-Oh! Today. Mm-hmm. But that I think that it's just, it's almost a, I hate saying this phrase, but you'll know exactly what I mean. It's like a, you had to be there kind of thing.
Right.
Like if you, you know, weren't there, then yeah.
And I watched a group of Digimon and One Piece players sit down and have a ball playing Edison. Someone had a bunch of Edison decks. They divvied them up and they all started playing. They weren't scared of the cards. They were excited to play.
Yeah. So, I think it's a deserved popular format, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So next question is, in the Pokemon TCG, certain cards have different arts and rarities, like Charizard EX, for instance. Some comments have been made that Yu-Gi-Oh! Should do the same to lower the value of key cards and decks, you know, that mixed rarity system. But realistically, what would this mean for the Yu-Gi-Oh! Market, collectors, and players? Especially since Yu-Gi-Oh! Doesn't rotate, so would alt arts or alternate rarities cause the market to plummet and harm the game? This is something I haven't thought too much about. So
toss me the ball.
Okay,
I'm about to get very Alec on this.
Yeah,
one.
You can handle this.
Fuck the market.
Okay.
Yu-Gi-Oh! And the market, that those two things are completely separate. The card game is not the market rides on the back of the card game. The card game does not ride on the back of the market. That's not how this works. The if cards fall in value, that doesn't do anything to the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game. It's like how in the Pokemon card game, their cards are significantly cheaper, and yet Pokemon players are having a great time with their cards.
Yeah.
Now, what we should be collecting and what should have value are older, time-honored cards,
yeah.
Not just whatever is, like, not meta cards should not be expensive because they're good. They should be expensive because everyone wants them, everyone wants to play them, but they don't need to, we don't need, how much is SP Lignite right now?
Yeah, like $100.
Doesn't need to be $100. She should be like 40.
Yeah, okay, so I, a little conflicted here. I'm going to try not to be a fence sitter, though. I'm going to try to actually like take a side at the end, but I'm going to just express both sides I have.
Okay.
So, the market is an important thing in a way, because I know it can influence players' decisions around like whether they want to purchase a product. And that matters because, like we've seen in our own local card shop, if people feel there's no value to be pulled in a set at all, then they just won't buy the set, and it will sit on its shop shelf, and that shop might just be like, okay, I'm not stocking Yu-Gi-Oh! Because the players aren't buying it. And so that can lead to some harm in a lot of local communities and for local game stores.
I mean, I think it's value is relative.
Mm-hmm.
I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Players, when they want value out of a set, they really just mean good, useful cards.
Yeah.
If good, useful cards were cheaper, I think they'd still find value in the set, kind of like with Rarity Collection 1.
I think. So that's just sort of me pushing back a little on your point that, like, it doesn't matter at all. Like, mm-hmm. I think it matters. However, where my actual heart lies is this. I just want people to be able to get cards. This will always be my opinion. This is, like, the stance I will take is, do mixed rarity if it means players can get cards to play. I think that the number one reason like for this card game to exist is for people to be able to play it. So if you have a little knight that's like a rare or a common or a super, and then you've also got a pretty secret one that you want to flex with, like if that can be an option for players, good, right? I can get my $5 little knight, I can get my, you know, $150 little knight or whatever. And like one maybe can have a different art or whatever, but as long as they are functionally the same, I think it is more important for people to be able to get the goddamn things. Be able to just play your Prosperity or Triple Tactics, whatever. In that way, I 1,000,000% agree. This is a game about the players. It is not about like whether a vendor makes a profit. I do not care if a vendor loses all his money on some bet that he made about, you know, doing a market buyout doesn't bother me whatsoever.
Modern Yu-Gi-Oh cards should not have huge monetary values.
And the thing about modern Yu-Gi-Oh that's, I feel, it, where it's diverged some from like some of its contemporary games is like most modern cards today are almost, they're released with everybody knowing that its price won't last. Like, value for modern cards comes out of playability. Mm. And that is sort of a point that I feel like you were making.
Yeah.
Is like, Little Knight isn't valuable because it's got some old legacy to it or some appeal from the anime. It's valuable because it's good. And it's also a known fact that it will be reprinted at a point in time. Probably this year's tens or whatever. Whenever there's a valuable card, we all know that Konami will eventually reprint it. And so in that way, its value is always going to be fleeting. It's all like, it's a very like ephemeral sense of value that we know will go away at a time. If anything, the value comes from the fact that people want to get it early and fast and like reap the benefits of it in tournament. I need right. to have my Little Knight to compete this weekend. But like Little in theory, Knight, nothing is stopping you from like waiting.
And then Little Knight should be more expensive than, let's say,
completely random common
Snake
card.
Eye Oak. It yeah. should be more expensive. But it should not be $100 expensive. That's bonkers. The Yu-Gi-Oh! Market, people love the Yu-Gi-Oh! Market because they've made so much money with it. Because the way Konami prints cards, there is a system and a strategy where people are able to buy low, sell high, and consistently make money off these sets. But to whose benefit? That only yeah. benefits like a very small set of people. Most people just want to play their cards.
Yes.
And they're willing to pay for the cards, but these prices are obscene.
I really do wish sometimes that we could all just like zoom out, like really zoom out and decouple these card games from money.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's idealistic thinking to some degree, right? Like, the cards are a product that you buy at a store, so there's fundamentally some money involved. Even if you like want to just say, okay, a pack of Yu-Gi-Oh cards is $4.49 and you get 9 cards in it, so literally every card is worth 50 cents, right? Like just divvying up, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there's that. But like, I do wish there was just a world where like card value wasn't such a big part of the conversation. Like,
it wouldn't be if we had multiple rarities per card.
Yeah, like I do think that the multiple rarities thing would be a net win. And Yu-Gi-Oh's done it before. Like, you know, in those GX series sets, like for mm-hmm. the kind of early part of the GX era sets, they did things where like a card would be a rare and an ulti or a super and an ulti. And, you know, sometimes the cards sucked. They were like bad ultis or whatever, but still, you could get cards in multiple rarities. So, like, Yu-Gi-Oh's done it before. I don't have the market data. I have no clue if Konami found that hampered sales or hampered the secondary market or how much do they care about it? Konami,
I just think it was more expensive than they wanted it to be.
Maybe
to
the printing process was. I don't know. I have no clue. But, like, I agree with you that, like, I'm not really all that concerned about, like, the market, air quotes. Like, I think that at the end of the day, it's more important to me that players can get cards quickly and play them, and to that end, reprint liberally, or do mixed rarity, or do whatever it takes to get cards in players' hands so they can put them in their decks and play them. So.
And I'm going to resist the urge to rant about how much I hate the Yu-Gi-Oh! Market.
Ring rant a little bit.
I mean, okay.
I mean,
because see, earlier, was it last week? I think it was last week when they announced like the Retro Pack reprint. There were people complaining about how that would affect the value of Retro Pack cards in people's collections and like for collectors and vendors. And I was like, I could honestly care less how valuable your old Retro Pack cards are. It's honestly just better that people can get their hands on these cards. Or at least that's what I thought until we started having this conversation. I realize now there's actually not a lot of value to reprinting Retro Pack. The cards in Retro Pack are not good. Modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Players really don't need those cards. So it's actually kind of weird to reprint the entire Retro Pack. In that one weird way, I actually am like, yeah, you kind of like hit people's binders for a product that isn't going to be that
doesn't
popular.
Doesn't have to really, yeah.
Even though I want it. Yeah. I want the product. It's just, it is weird.
I'm willing to go down this rabbit hole a bit. So I think with Retro Pack, I know that people sort of feel bad that maybe they have like old Retro Pack cars that might potentially lose some value here or lose some sense of exclusivity. I have sympathy for that. I do. I think Retro Pack as a product, you're also right, doesn't have like a super pragmatic reason to exist.
Yeah.
I think, like you said, most of the cars in it aren't playable today. The best you can hope for is maybe like getting another shot at pulling something you could use in GOAT format or whatever. But I think it is almost meant to be like the product's meant to represent something different than that. It's just supposed to represent like a trip down nostalgia lane.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people in this, like in this market where that's all they really would like is just, they just want a product where they can relive the Yu-Gi-Oh memories. And I'll be honest about Retro Pack 2 compared to, like, you know, last year they did the 25th anniversary thing and they did like yep. LOB and Pharaoh Servant. And they had like the Legendary Collection. I think Retro Pack does a better job of delivering the nostalgic hits than those sets do. Because LOB sounds cool and there's blue eyes in it.
But we've experienced it.
But we actually know that in reality, most of what you're pulling
garbage
is garbage vanillas with 650 attack and fusions with 1100 attack and equip spells and shitty field spells that you cannot use. Whereas Retro Pack has just the highlight cards of those eras. The things that we nostalgically like look back on fondly, your Mystic Tomatoes and your Rat Control type stuff, your like, you know, DD Warriorlies, the highlight cards all compiled into a pack where like every pack you open will have little bangers, just memory rejogs and kind of, what is the word for it? Like getting a dopamine.
Oh, dopamine hit.
Yeah, kind of. So.
But then it's weird though. Because had they just re-released Retro Pack instead of LOB, Metal Raiders, and all of these sets, then I'd be fine. But now that we've done the trip down the nostalgia lane for so long.
So you feel like now it kind of feels like milking it.
Yeah, now it is milking it. And that in that one way, I do feel bad for collectors and like vendors because it feels like an unnecessary.
I get you. Yeah.
And that's weird because I just said fuck the market.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I'll rein it in with this. At the end of the day, these cards are just meant to be experienced by as many people as possible.
Right.
So they're doing their job. They're releasing the cards. Some more people get to have them.
And the job is not done, Konami.
Yeah. There will be winners. There will be losers. On the whole, I still think re-releasing Retro Pack is probably still a good thing. Probably overall or something. Okay, your thoughts on a Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime reboot or remake? I wholeheartedly believe that when they announce it, the internet would break with excitement. I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Should follow the Digimon and Final Fantasy VII remake model and create a fresh reimagination of the original anime. The series could follow the Duelist Kingdom arc and sequences could remain the same, but maybe include new additions like a new additional protagonist to join the crew or new interesting villains of the week to add spice to Duelist Kingdom. Number two, duels following modern rules with power levels and game speed that's maybe more akin to the 2016 movie. And then three, Yugi, Kaiba, Joey playing with new effect retrains of their ace monsters that could also coincide with real-world marketing for the anime. A lot to unpack in this.
And I want to caution everybody. Because they went ahead and they mentioned Digimon and Final Fantasy. So
we gotta get through
Alex I gotta Rand. Tell you guys this.
Okay.
A reboot / remake is not all it's cracked up to be. Yu-Gi-Oh! We got dubbed Yu-Gi-Oh! We had carefully curated by four kids Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah. With all of its wins and losses.
Yeah, there are positives and negatives that come with that. If they redid the original Yu-Gi-Oh, it would not be with that four kids touch. It's not likely we'd even have the old voice actors. Even if they're alive on this planet today, we might not have them if it gets dubbed at all.
Yeah.
And then you have what would Yugi be like? What would Yu-Gi-Oh be like if they just removed certain things that we've come to expect from Yu-Gi-Oh. You know, most of the jokes that people make about the Yu-Gi-Oh anime are from the abridged series. They're not even from the original anime. And I promise you, if they remade Yu-Gi-Oh, you're not going to get those jokes. Those memes aren't going to happen.
Yeah. So you sound maybe a bit more pessimistic about this.
Yeah, because years ago, I'd have been like, yeah, I can't wait for a Yu-Gi-Oh reboot. But I've seen what reboots look like now.
So, I can talk a little bit about like the Final Fantasy VII remake thing. I know you can probably talk about Digimon. I'm assuming we're talking about like Digimon 2020, that one. Okay, so we've both experienced both of these things as it happens. So let's quickly touch on them before we get into the Yu-Gi-Oh question more. Because there's stuff to say about them all. I think Final Fantasy VII remake it's got a weird place for me. Because I didn't actually even play the original Final Fantasy VII on PlayStation. But I've seen, like everybody else, through cultural osmosis, I know about Cloud, I know about Sephiroth, Tifa, Aerith. Everybody knows, you know, the iconic bits from Final Fantasy VII. Mm-hmm. Sephiroth's got the long Masamune sword, he kills Aerith, he's known for like his skewer attack, he's in Smash Bros. Now, he's the, you know, gaming's biggest villain of all time. Cloud's the spiky-haired twink anime protagonist with a huge sword that's like bigger than his body. How does he carry that thing? And he's been in Kingdom Hearts. And, you know, Tifa's got big boobs and there's Rule 34 all over the place. And Aerith dies and this and that. So I kind of know about it. I think that all the cultural expectations around Final Fantasy VII have all found their way into the remake and, you know, and rebirth. And it feels like Square Enix almost is overwhelmed with the expectations everybody has for it. And now they've started to lean a little bit into multiverse stuff and multiple timelines and kind of just, you know, this game that feels like it has to wow you and give you everything you expect to the extent that it actually sort of undermines the original story because, you know, I feel like most people who have played Rebirth know the ending is ambiguous, we'll say.
To say the least.
It's a bit ambiguous, but it was something where the story had already been written. Like, you're following an established story, but, like, they changed it. Same. So, and that was, like, that with Remake?
Or they could have changed it.
Or did they? Or did they not? Or do we know? Like, I don't know. And that happened in Remake and Rebirth, and I feel like part of that was, and then there's, like, the whispers. We all know, like, what that represents or what we think it represents. Sometimes I feel like they got lost in the sauce of modernizing the Final Fantasy VII story. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a bastardization of the Final Fantasy VII story. And I speak very negatively about that specific aspect. It's a wonderful, cheesecake fest of fan service.
Yeah, you get your favorite characters in these beautiful graphics.
And like lots of comedic moments. Like, if you just want to spend time with the Final Fantasy VII cast, that's what the remake accomplishes.
Yeah.
Being just to hang out and joke around.
Hyper-modern graphics and, you know, fun moments and awkward, you know, party building things.
But like the story, whoo, you can miss me with that. I hate the story in the remakes for Final Fantasy VII. And it's almost like they flipped the original on its head where I don't care about the story in the remake. I care about everything else. Well, in the original, the story was everything.
Yeah. To quickly touch on Digimon 2020, we watched this anime. I hated it. Digimon 2020, to me, I know some people maybe liked it. I feel like it was devoid of a lot of personality. The characters really barely talked. I feel like they were robbed of their personalities. But then I realized that maybe, actually, what I really missed was the, like, four kids version of Digimon that I saw as a kid. The, you know, Digimon, Digital Monsters, Digimon. No, that's not in there. That's not in 2020 because that was all just like a Western creation. The Digirap, that's a Western creation. And like all the
quirky, we don't need the Digirap to come back. It's okay.
But like the kids, you know, or like the Pokemon rap, all that stuff for kids. Like, and same with like Ty and like all these, their quirky personalities, the funny writing. I kind of started to realize that that's like four kids creation. So when they remade this anime, I felt like it just kind of felt a bit lifeless and like just it followed a story, but the fun felt missing for me.
I mean, I barely even call it a story, to be honest with you. So I was very disappointed in just the plot of the remake of Digimon was not it wasn't very good. Like, because Myotismon is a villain. In Japanese or in English, Myotismon makes an engaging villain. Was Millenniummon an engaging villain?
Millenniummon didn't talk to the characters.
No one did. Didn't engage with it. Like, having these just unspoken monster villains was so boring. And I'm like, what are these kids really fighting against? Like, in the original Digimon series, they have these evil masterminds that they're fighting against. In the remake, they're fighting against the apocalypse?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't care for it. But I guess
now we get to Yu-Gi-Oh!
To bring it back to the Yu-Gi-Oh! Thing, do I, in a vacuum, think a Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime reboot is a good idea? Sure, it's fine.
A part of me still wants one.
Yeah, I will not say no to it. Like, if they make a reboot, I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be cheering with the rest of them. I will be one of the people on the internet who's hyped.
I'm watching it one way or another.
I will be, like, watching it on release day. Like, if it's 3 a.m. or something in my time when new episodes drop, then catch me at 3 a.m.
That's
right?
Where I'll be.
The thing is, though, I do worry, like, if it could...
It can be done wrong, and it can be done poorly, and...
I guess the reason why we probably sound so apprehensive is because I've seen
enough remakes now that there's no reason to be optimistic about the word a remake or reboot anymore.
Yeah, and maybe that's less of Yu-Gi-Oh's problem and more of just
that's the
modern
industry.
Media industry kind of like reboot problem. So let's give it an optimistic ending to this question.
Okay.
If this happens and, like, it's good, do you think that this could, like, bring new people into Yu-Gi-Oh? Or
a good Yu-Gi-Oh reboot?
I think
I don't know if it would bring good new people, but it would certainly bring back the people we've lost.
I think it could bring new people, too.
Depends on how it's marketed in the West.
Depends on how it's marketed. Sorry, I'll be negative again. Here's the worry, though. So it brings the people into Yu-Gi-Oh! Now, how's the card game going to serve them?
That's true. The power of Yu-Gi-Oh! Back in the day was the cards followed the show.
Yeah, they followed
and
they weren't
very different from what you saw in the show.
Like, sure, everyone jokes about, like, people cheated in the show, but, like, it wasn't that far off from, you know, they're still mostly just playing vanillas with spells that have, like, one effect each. And, you know, a monster, if it had an effect, had, like, one effect.
Dark Munition worked the same way.
I think if you get a Yu-Gi-Oh! Reboot, and it's, like, based on Yugi and Kaiba and stuff, and then you decide, oh, like, I remember Yu-Gi-Oh! I kind of want to play it again, and then you get introduced to whatever the fuck modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Is today, then we still run into a lot of the same
problems. A mecha waifu riding a dragon?
Well, not even just... yes, maybe the design thing, but that's not the big problem. I think Yu-Gi-Oh!'s art design and stuff, you can learn to like it or whatever, but I'm talking about, like, the meta. Like, let's say this happens.
But that's what I mean. It's level one, got zero attack, and when it attacks, you lose all your life points.
Oh, okay, yeah, I get what you're saying. So, yeah, basically, like, you know, the cool new Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime comes out, but it's Snake Eye format.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you want to try out Yu-Gi-Oh! And think, like, it's fun and cool, but then, like, you have to deal with, like, Snake Eyes doing long combos, breaking rules, and, like, everything.
Like, in order for a Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime to do its job, the cards do have to follow it to some degree.
Yeah.
And I don't know how we rectify that.
I think that, okay, here's what I think. A Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime reboot has to come with a Yu-Gi-Oh! TCG reboot. That's my maybe hot take. But I think that if you have a new Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime, you cannot put the people who see that you can't drop them into the modern TCG. I don't think it would be a good idea. I think people would just get overwhelmed and quit anyway. Not to say they would stop watching the anime. They might still just keep up with the anime for whatever reason. It could be fun to watch. Mm-hmm. But as supporting the TCG goes and, like, getting new people into the game, shit's kind of hit the fan at this point. Like, just I don't know. Or at least I have.
Or maybe in the reboot, Yugi and them, they all just use modern decks.
I mean, that's kind of what this person said. Like, Yugi, Kaiba, and Joe would play with, like, new effect retrains of their ace monsters and coincide with real
modern
world
decks. They're going to run Snake Eyes. They're going to run Labyrinth. Then you can play Yugi's deck. He's branded. He's got branded, y'all. All
right, listen. We're going to move on to the next question. Hey, folks, love the channel. It's actually got me back into Yu-Gi-Oh! Since I stopped playing in, like, 03. Even if the decks I play rarely win, his decks being Toons, Crystal Beasts, and Gate Guardians, I love how Yu-Gi-Oh! Can still invoke these old playground memories even 20-plus years later. My question or questions is in relation to these types of decks. What do you feel makes an archetype worth retraining? And do you feel that it's better to try to retrain an archetype while keeping its gimmick, such as Tunes, or to completely revamp it to try to keep it up with the new game as it is today, such as with Gate Guardians? Thanks again for all the content you folks give us. I'm sure I can speak for the community when I say we love and appreciate you all.
Ooh, I like this one.
Well, first of all, thank you. Appreciate just
the
compliments. This is a good one.
This is a really good question.
Okay. How are you feeling?
Man. Okay.
Do you want to break the question into its sort of two parts? Or
just... Yeah, I think you kind of got to take this one piece by piece. Because they really are looking at two different types of retrains of archetypes.
Yeah.
They did Tunes, right? Tunes, they didn't change how Tunes work. Well, in some ways they did. They removed the whole, like, if Toon World gets destroyed, this card gets destroyed text on, I think, all of the new Tunes. A lot of that. And then I think most of the new Tunes can be special summoned.
Yeah. They've sort of modernized it a lot.
So, but nothing really changed, right?
Yeah.
But Gate Guardian...
it's entirely
Because, like... How do you define the Gate Guardian mechanic, you know, before the modern cards?
They really had to reimagine it, because originally Gate Guardian was, it's three monsters and then a Gate Guardian, and it's all awkward as hell to do, it doesn't do anything.
Tribute summon all three pieces
and then tribute them for one monster?
You had to have the big one in hand, right? He wasn't from deck. Yeah. So in a weird way, Gate Guardian didn't even have a mechanic.
There's nothing to go off of.
So in a weird way, that gave them more room to work with because they didn't have anything.
So which do you prefer better? Like when you're kind of tied to those original gimmicks or when you just get to reimagine it from the ground up?
So I think we can both agree that between Tunes and Gate Guardian is the more complete, like, strategy.
I guess so.
Like, then all the new Gate Guardian cards work together. They work well together. And the most they ask you to do is run some old bricks.
Yeah.
Tunes have kind of, because they didn't come rework the way Tunes work, you pretty much just ignore all old Tune support just gets ignored.
Yeah.
And you just run the new stuff, and because they came out sporadically,
it gets really jumbled.
Yeah, it's just a series of pieces.
Yeah, so where I stand on it is there have been a few examples of things like Gate Guardians, actually fairly recently even. Like the Horus deck, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's like based on Horus the Black Flame Dragon, but truthfully it's entirely different. Entirely, just its own name.
The Shining Sarcophagus deck retrains a bunch of monsters.
So, I mean, I don't know which one I think is outright better, but I think that so they both can suffice to evoke your childhood.
Yes,
like
they definitely
in terms
can.
Of the visuals and like the theming. I think if we're going at it from like a gameplay angle, I think I prefer the latter, which is like taking like the Gate Guardian sort of approach, where like you just make an archetype out of something that really truly did not have any basis of gameplay style to begin with. Because you
Metalmorph need to make deck.
It, yeah, like the Metalmorph deck that was recently announced. Yeah. Like same thing. They're taking a scene in a duel effectively and like turning it into a sort of an archetype or a deck.
And if I handed you Tunes and Gate Guardian, which deck would you play?
I think I'd probably play Gate Guardian. Probably. Now, in Toon's defense, they, through their like different layers of support that they've gotten over the years, they've managed to get it functioning pretty smoothly. It's just that you, like you said, lost all the old Tunes. The old Tunes simply have no reason to be run.
You have to take them all out the deck and it'll run whatever new Tunes come out.
So, I guess it just comes down to the player. Like, what do you, you know... Do you want to still feel like here's one, Ancient Gears. Do you like how they've done Ancient Gears? Do you not like it?
All right.
Do you like that Ancient Gear Golem, as old and bricky and awkward as he is still a part?
Okay.
I mean, like...
You would bring up Ancient Gears.
Yeah, I like has a strong
opinion
on this.
Guys, so anyone who doesn't know this about me, Ancient Gear Golem is my favorite card of all times. But I hate the Ancient Gear archetype. And I have for a very long time. Why? Because it's a very simple kind of beat down OTK strategy. And when it came out, there was really no strategy. It was a series of monsters that did nothing, and then Ancient Gear Golem.
I mean, they shared the same effect of, or mostly, most of them had that effect where your opponent couldn't use like spells and traps and they attacked.
But it wasn't really, synergy. Yeah, there was no synergy. There was no strategy, really.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
The, and then modern day Ancient Gears, they became just this go second OTK deck. That's all it wanted to do was make Chaos Giant and go ham.
I have a thought, but I'm going to hold it till you're done.
Okay. So, there's been many different iterations of Ancient Gear support because we had the structure decks and we've had just the new recent Ancient Gears. My biggest complaint with Ancient Gears before now was they'd moved away from the boss monster. We got the reactor dragon and I didn't fall in love with Ancient Gears so that you could tell me to stop running Ancient Gear Golem. I'm here for the Golem. I want to use Golem. That's what I'm about. Yeah. They made the Ultimate Pound, and I still wasn't happy because they wanted me to replace Golem with Ultimate Pound, and I didn't want to do that. I want to run the original Golem.
So with this new line of stuff that still feels it's very Golem-centric.
The new line, it doesn't just say you can run Golem. It says you have to run Golem. And that's actually where I want to be with my retrained archetypes. Mm-hmm. Even if they're bricks, I want to run the old cards. I don't want to just throw them all to the side.
Yeah. Okay. I get you. The thought that I had that I was going to add in is I kind of hate that so many legacy archetypes get typecasted into the go second OTK approach.
Yeah.
Because I think that's more just a symptom of modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Being so fast and like combo-centric that really the only way that you can hope for most of these old decks to work is you turn them into just a deck that kind of goes second and kills people. Heroes are like that. Ancient Gears are like that. Cyber Dragons are like that. And they aren't all that way, but it feels a little dull.
For a lot of legacy archetypes, that's because that's the way the anime likes them to be.
They got
to
be attacky based.
They have to be attack based. You have to be able to swing a duel all in one punch. You know, Flame Wing Man needs to burn the opponent for all that damage.
I guess what you're really here. So here's what it maybe really is that they have to cut to the chase. Like in the anime, Ancient Gear Golem did not get summoned on Crowler's first turn.
Nope.
Or even it's his second turn. But when it did get summoned, it made a big impact. And then Jaden took his turn. And finally made Flame Wingman and like whoosh and just barely swung over Ancient Gear Golem and then burn with the effect. But the game actually plays out over several turns.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is though, like in modern Yu-Gi-Oh! There's just no space or time for that to exist.
Our games have to end fast.
The games have to end fast. So they have to kind of just fast forward all of it.
Yep.
So your Ancient Gear stuff all happens in one turn. Whether it's going first and kind of trying to create some board setup or whatever, or it's going second and trying to kill the opponent then and there. Either way, it's like, but that's not the fault of the legacy support. That's just, I guess, the fault of the power level of Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, I mean, the general direction of the game has put us in that position. But as far as retrains go, I think Konami's done a very good job with designing their legacy archetype retrains. There aren't, outside of Red Eyes, most times when they revisit an archetype,
it tends to work out.
It tends to work out pretty well.
They've got their formula down, I think, in the modern day, too. Like, they know how to design stuff to work well. Legacy support, like, you know, 10 years ago didn't look the same as, like, legacy support
today. No.
Okay. Next question. This is from Dre. Do you guys feel that the Master Duel Simulator gives Yu-Gi-Oh! Players a better experience as far as executing combos than the actual TCG at times? I love how when certain things happen on the field, there are pop-up questions or golden highlights in the field when certain things can happen. It's kind of a quicker, easier question.
I mean, yeah, I think for the average Yu-Gi-Oh! Player, automating combos helps out a lot.
I think my favorite part about it is that it actually, if you've been playing a deck in real life for a while and you're pretty good with it, but maybe you don't feel like you fully have mastered it, Master Duel can be good for showing you prompts or kind of things.
I've learned highlight, a lot.
Yeah, you learn something new about your deck. Like, oh, I can chain that when that happens? Like, I didn't know. Like, I just didn't.
Because, like, when you read your card, we all read our cards maybe twice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, on that second read through, if you miss something or didn't quite understand a sentence or a passage on a card, you'll probably never understand it. And so from now on, you're going to use that card in the way you think it works, but not what's actually written on the card. But the simulators don't care what you think the card does. They're going to show you exactly what it can do.
And I think that having those, like, you know, the glowing icons or glowing cards, you know, like to kind of let you know when you can do stuff, it's generally a nice quality of life thing. Mm-hmm. I think that some people say it's like Yu-Gi-Oh on training wheels, right? You should have to remember all your effects and your triggers and everything yourself. All your options, you should know them yourself.
I think if you're competing, sure.
If you're competing in paper, right? Like, sure. Physical TCG, yeah, you do need to know that stuff. And maybe this hand-holding is not good. But I really think for the average person, it's fine. I think it's a good...
Now you can go to Worlds for Master Duel, so you can call it training wheels if you want. If someone goes to Worlds and competes with Master Duel against it's other people... It's
fine,
with,
yeah.
There's no problem.
Speaking of, here's another question. What do you hope to see from Master Duel when it reaches 2.0? So what I guess he means by that is, like, right now, I think Master Duel just got version 1.8 update or something like that. That might not be the exact number, but still in version 1.x.
Oh, okay.
Right? So whenever, if and when Master Duel reaches, like, a 2.0 update, what major sort of overhauls or features would we like to see? I know, I guess it's probably more of a question for me because I play a lot of Master Duel.
You want me
Duel.
To be honest?
Hit it.
When Master Duel hits 2.0, mm-hmm. nothing will change.
That's your prediction?
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think nothing major will actually change. Now, what's my little quick wish list? I won't harp on this for too long, but, like, alternate formats, let me change the music during duels, make casual mode at least do your daily quests for you, and add a draft mode. I don't know, like... I don't want a lot from Master Duel. I just want more ways for people to play it, and I'll be fine.
All that stuff sounds cool. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't
but
either.
If 2.0 does happen, and it comes with a suite of changes to really make it feel like a Master Duel 2.0, I will eat a card. I will film it. I'll put it online. I will eat an entire card. That's how strongly I don't believe in Konami's desire to upgrade change. Master Duel.
I will be honest. I can't describe the exact experience that I've had, but I can just say that changes and new features in this game do not come unless there is a large monetary incentive for them to come. I'll just put it that way. So any little features you think that you want in Master Duel, I've got my wish list. Ask yourself this. Does it make them extra money? And if the answer is no, then you're probably not going to get that feature. Don't hold your breath. If the answer is yes, then maybe it'll happen. But, like, ask yourself, like, can they monetize it in some way? And then would you be willing to pay that?
You know what I think is going to happen? You know what I really think is going to come to Master Duel? And this might be in a 2.0 update. The ability to buy the dust... The rarity dust.
That would be really nasty.
I think that's actually going to be a Master Duel at some point.
Because, like, that's that nasty premium currency. Like, right now you got your gems, you earn your gems from playing, and you can buy some gems in the store, but you still got to open packs and pull them. Now, if you can actually buy the dust outright, it's funny because people would be mad if they let you do that, but they'd spend.
They would.
And they'd spend. Like, people would call them greedy, but I think people would buy that shit in a heartbeat. Because everybody's, you know, dust is valuable, and
it is.
I wonder how much they charge.
Oh, it'll be bad. It'll be horrible.
Because, like, it's 30 UR dust to make, like, a, you know, like a UR, and UR is usually the good cards.
And you can make any UR, so they can't make it too cheap.
Yeah. Oh, man, that'd be. Yeah, so, I mean, the things I want from Master Duel are the same things that most people want. I'll be honest, I don't think most are coming. I love Master Duel. I play it a lot. I will continue to play it. I don't hold my breath on these features. If they show up, I'll be happy. That's as far as it gets.
I think we should all just appreciate what Master Duel is, you know, in 1.8 and what that means for 2.0 and 3.0 and 4.6.
What's your favorite? Here's the next question. What's your favorite toxic or degenerate strategy in Yu-Gi-Oh! Strategy or deck? For example, when Master Duel first came out, I played a zombie deck that could one card combo into VFD off of normal summon Shiranui Solitaire, occasionally backed by Zombie World or Rivalry of Warlords. So, like, you know, Zombie World Rivalry kind of lockout. Do you have like a favorite toxic little deck? You played Zombie World Rivalry for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, like I did, but that was like a means to an end. It wasn't that I love playing Zombie World Rivalry combo. It was just I needed to if I wanted to like win games.
Yeah, probably the most degenerate toxic thing I've really played is like I played Grin Maju for a good bit.
You did. You played. Yeah. You played some Grin.
I played Grin Maju. The really sort of. And I played Fluanderies for a bit. Like Fluanderies.
You sure did.
Yeah, when like Barrier Statue was around. That's probably my two most toxic decks I've played. Like if I had to say. I mean, those decks don't really speak to me very much, if I'm being completely honest. I am ultimately like, I do want to play Yu-Gi-Oh! I want to tango with my opponent. I'm not a sadist in the sense that like I want them to not be able to do anything.
Oh, wait a minute, I guess so.
Oh, you got one?
I forgot
one?
When I my gadget deck in Edison.
Oh yeah. I mean it's done. Yeah, you're playing stun.
I do enjoy telling my opponents they can't special summon. Then
a
they
fresh
watch,
gadget.
Then
yeah.
They watch me normal summon another gadget and get my search.
You played a little bit of Dark World back when you were first getting into it. Were you?
So that
people
was,
didn't like that deck much.
Yeah, I played that and Judgment and Lightsworns. Mm-hmm. So they were toxic for the time because I was just indiscriminately popping cards.
Yeah, I mean, I think when I was first learning Yu-Gi-Oh, like beginning to learn about the competitive scene, I dabbled in like pretty much anything I could get my hands on. So like I remember playing like kind of Macrocosmos, like D-Fissure sort of stun decks for a bit just because it was, you know. But yeah, I think generally I'm not drawn to like very toxic stuff, or at least not for long. It doesn't give me long-term satisfaction. I think people get into that toxic stuff because they get so worn down by what modern Yu-Gi-Oh can be. It's like you can only lose to Super Heavy Samurai or Snake Eye or whatever on the Master Duel ladder so many times before you say fuck it. Like I don't care, everyone can burn, right? Like I'm going to play a chain burn thing. I've been seeing that pop up a lot. Or like I am normal summoning Fossil Dyna, Moon Mirror Shield, Necro Valley, and just set three or four or whatever and like fuck you, right? Like it's not me, but I see where people get to that point. I don't like those decks much myself, but they have a place, and their place, and if nothing else, is to like is a venting system. It's a form
think,
of release.
I think some
and
people.
Retribution.
I think we all have some level of like sadism and masochism in our hearts, and I think some people have a bit more of a sadistic streak to them, and so they get drawn to strategies that just cause pain.
Yeah. Here's another question. If we got an alternative format like what Paul wants, rather than era specific, should they make extra decks smaller or perhaps consider no extra decks? A format with extra deck around.
So for weird formats, I prefer mechanic changing formats rather than like card pool locked formats. That just seems more interesting to me. So
the sound of this sounds good to you.
Yeah, this does sound good to me.
I agree. I actually think that, so for me, when you have to design a different card pool, it gets so subjective that,
yeah,
like, my age-old thing I always say about, like, Heart of the Underdog formats, it's kind of designed by the card shop or the local community as to, like, what's banned, what's not, but people are always going to disagree. Like, does this kind of borderline deck belong banned, or should it be, like, allowed? Like, what, you know. But I think that if you just do a blanket thing, like, okay, no extra decks, then yes, there are going to be decks that are severely hampered by that. Some just won't function. But at least because it's just like a blanket rule, then no one can say that it's, you know, not purposefully favoring someone or another.
And as Konami continues to release new cards, they can just enter into that format and you're just not locked, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the benefits of Commander format before Wizards embraced Commander as a format they would support. They didn't have to support it because anytime Wizards made new cards, they were legal in this fan-made Commander format.
Yeah. I think a no extra deck format could be fun. There's a lot of decks that come to mind. I know like there's like ritual strategies these days that are pretty good. Mm. And we just have decks like Yugi Sarcophagus strategy or whatever. Like a lot of legacy decks could be decent in that way. I'd play it. Like I would... I'll try almost anything, right? Like, I think no extra deck, like, it seems like so much of the vitriol in this game, to be honest, and so much of the just the conversation about, like, the issues with Modern Yu-Gi-Oh, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really do come from the existence of that goddamn extra deck. Those 15 cards, like, it is only
they run this game.
They run this game. Like, the extra deck runs this game. And seeing it played without that, I'm not saying it's, like, the solution. This will fix it all, right? But I'm saying, like, it would be a drastically different Yu-Gi-Oh, and that's something.
It would hurt, though, because that means no Plunder Patrol.
Yeah, that's true. So, I don't know. I mean, I like this. That question comes to us from Basic Nerd, by the way.
He's okay.
Familiar.
I was like, Basic Nerd's got to be in here somewhere.
Yeah. Okay, here's a different one.
All right.
It's kind of a cool one. Hey, guys, do you think there should be a separate player pool at a YCS for professional players and Pro-Am players? Pro-AM? Is that...
No, Pro-Am. I forget what that phrase, like, exactly means, but...
Well, with some way... Yeah, you can look it up, but with some way for a Pro-Am player to work their way into the pro pool. Oh, so that sounds like a, like, I guess you can be, like, either a registered pro or, like, a pro-to-be-esque thing, like a aspiring to be... Is that... Make sure I have this so, definition sort of right.
Yeah, I've heard it in, like... Yeah, pro-amateur.
Okay, pro-amateur. Okay, good. Great. Okay, so thanks from distinctly different Basic Nerd, LOL. So I think it's another Basic Nerd question. So yeah, there's like a pro, like you get a designation as a pro, and there's sort of a, he's suggesting what if there's like a separate player pool at a YCS for professional players and then professional or amateur players.
I mean, because like a pro-am tournament includes amateurs and professionals together, and... Right now, that's what we already are in Yu-Gi-Oh! Is Pro-Am, essentially.
Yeah.
Because we have a bunch of pros, and they're the guys who make it to the end, and then a bunch of amateurs who they fill out the rest of the bracket. Should they be separated?
Should there be like a distinction?
I think Konami knows. Konami knows who their best players are, but we kind of did have a separate circuit for them at one point with the UDS.
True. You know, speaking of that, there's actually been a bit of a movement I've heard from some people to get rid of the UDS like prize belt buy system. I don't know if you knew what that is, but so basically, like, if you won a UDS event, which is very difficult because they were tough to qualify for and even tougher to win, the level of competition was extremely high. UDS ended in 2020.
Yeah.
No more UDS events outside of that, like, belt special thing they did this year, but you know what I mean. So, if you won a UDS, then you, for the rest of your Yu-Gi-Oh! Career, get floated past the first two rounds of every YCS event. So Jesse Cotton does not actually play every round of a YCS. You might not know this.
I did not know that.
Round three with a 2-0 record. He just gets floated past the first two rounds. Okay. He doesn't have to play the riffraff, so to speak.
Makes sense.
So a lot of people actually have been kind of fed up with this because it's a grandfathered in plan type of thing, right? Like that UDS does not, no more players can get that privilege now. So the people that got it, they just have it, and that's it. Paulo, like, he's another person. Paulo Gonçalves?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, won a UDS. And so, though, some people feel that, like, now that we're, like, 3-4 years on from that, and no one else can ever get that privilege, that they just need to abolish that system because it's kind of unfair that, like, everyone else has to play these first two rounds of YCS, oftentimes rounds that can be extremely volatile, and it's, like, a huge pool of players and all that stuff. So... Not exactly related to this question. I just wanted to kind of put it
no,
out there.
No, no, no.
Any thoughts on it?
Ooh, man.
It's kind of related in, I guess, a way.
You know how in fighting game tournaments, there's the concept of pools?
Yes.
And typically, the highly ranked players, they skip the pool session.
Yeah, in some games it's like that.
And I've seen that in a few cases because nobody wants to see... The like one of the best players scrub out in pools.
Well, I'd argue that people want to see them drown in pools in the sense that it's like a fun narrative. Like, it's exciting to see top player lose.
But I think what they... viewing audience, but the competitors, they love to catch Jesse Cotton in round one and, like, hit him with something degenerate real quick before the tournament really gets on. But, you know, to the viewing public, you know, they want to see the best of the best play. If these guys take early losses in the tournament and then they don't top or whatever, they don't make day two, it makes for a less exciting event for the viewing public. Now, for the competitors, it's a competition. It's competition. You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I sometimes think, like, if you had a sort of a circuit for just registered pros, maybe, first of all, what does it take to become a pro? Like, what, like, if this system was, like, implemented today, let's say, like, starting tomorrow, this is how it's going to be, then who's in the pro circuit from the start? Is it just anyone who's, like, won a YCS, or is it, like, how does one then get in?
I think top four of a YCS, if you are top four at a YCS, you're not, like, you're not regular.
Yeah.
You're not good at this game. You're pretty damn great.
Yeah.
And if you've done it twice, you're not.
You're kind of insane.
You know what? You must be a pro. Like, we don't have, like, a hard definition or a hard rule of what makes a pro or not a pro. But when you've been up on that podium a couple times, it's readily apparent. Oh, wait, that person's not regular.
I do think it would be kind of, like, a lot of top players would maybe enjoy the ability to really, like, have that tag of, like, I am officially a pro player. Like, I think a lot would come with that. And I think that there could be the benefits of it, like, being a thing to aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right now, it's sort of being good at Yu-Gi-Oh! Exactly is, like, a little vague. Like, we know that winning a YCS or topping, like, makes you good, but if there was a more concrete, like, this says you are or aren't, or, like, you've made it or haven't, that could help with, like, motivating players.
Right.
Here's the downsides, though. Or here's what I see as a potential downside. I think that it might kind of be indirectly telling people about their worth as, like, a Yu-Gi-Oh! Player. Or it might be, like, discouraging in this weird way. I'm not saying it would, like, discourage me, per se. But, like, I think that some players might actually feel that it's, like, move out of his way. He's a pro player. You know what I mean? Like, he's walking, like, kind of metaphorically, it's almost like kind of it's saying that pro players are, like, actually more valid Yu-Gi-Oh! Players, do you think that would, or maybe I'm
at OYCS, pro players are definitely more valid. If Jesse Cotton walks down an aisle, get out of his way. This is like this. Like, we're all here to play, but this is until he loses, this is his venue.
Yeah.
Like, in every other sport, you defer to greatness. And I know Yu-Gi-Oh! Is not technically a sport, it's a game, but people want it to be taken seriously as if it's just as important as basketball, then give LeBron some room.
Yeah.
Like, respect greatness. I think consistently, like, topping players should be designated as professionals. If that means that they continue to, if they get the honor of skipping rounds, I think that's perfectly fine. They've more than earned it. In fact, they should just go ahead and adopt that system for our, I guess these would be tier one events, our YCSs and those types of events.
Right.
I think, was it only winners of UDS?
Yeah, you win a UDS.
Then let's continue that with YCSs too.
Well, but YCSs aren't UDSs though.
I mean, that's true, but we don't have an equivalent anymore.
Yeah, so maybe what you're really thinking, or at least what I kind of think would be nice, is Konami just bring back the UDS system. It probably could use some fixes and tweaks, because I know that there were complaints about, like, how points and eligibility worked and things like that. But, yeah, I'm with you. I think that, like, having that designation is fine, just as long as there is an avenue towards it.
Yeah, I think players should be able to work towards... Because the thing is, if you designate these, like, let's say right now there's 15 professional players in Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah.
That gives us something to aspire to. Some people will, like, wilt under the, like... the difference between being an amateur and a professional. But for some people, that finally gives them like a finish line to see. Like, yeah. I want to be a professional player, and there's a way to do it.
Yeah.
I think that's fine. I'm on board with there being a system to label professionals.
Okay. Well, here's another question. Mostly for Paul, but also for you. What is your current IRL competitive Yu-Gi-Oh! Playing frequency? Are you going to locals once in a blue moon, or do you still try to compete like monthly IRL? How do you guys? Yeah, funny question. Not a lot. All I can say for myself, I play Master Duel pretty regularly. I do not really go to locals very much. I used to. I've had a period in my life where I went to locals like every Saturday. And also on weekdays, I'd show up when I could to like play test, sit around, play, do whatever. If there's a weekly tournament, I would, like a tournament in the middle of the week, I would do it. Basically, the times I go now are really more so just for like sneak peeks. Like if there's a sneak peek locally, I usually hit that up. You?
I haven't competed in Yu-Gi-Oh in years, and I'm not going to anytime soon.
Yeah. Is there something you don't like about it?
I mean, it's just not my thing anymore. Like, what modern Yu-Gi-Oh is, my brain does not want to deal with it.
Yeah.
I do not.
I feel like I could handle modern Yu-Gi-Oh. Like, I could keep up or whatever. But my thing is just that, like, I've kind of tried to drag my feet to a regional or, like, a YCS in the last couple years. And for some reason, I just, whenever the thought of, like, doing it comes up for me, I just find something else I want to do more. Like, I like playing the Yu-Gi-Oh, but I don't know that I really want to, like, spend my weekend out playing it physically when I could be at something that I deem more fun for myself. Mm-hmm. In many cases, that's, like, conventions. Like, we've been going to a lot more conventions this last couple years. Your Anime Expo or Anime NYC or the Sonic Symphony we went to recently. Like, something where I feel like I get more of my, like, interests catered to, or, like, my time spent valuably. I also have a weird reason why I don't like YCS events. It's a bit of a confession.
What's that?
I don't like YCS events and regionals and stuff because they don't actually give me enough Yu-Gi-Oh! For my buck. And that's going to sound kind of weird, but I play Master Duel so much where I'm able to just like queue up, play, that the idea of like having to sleeve up everything, drive to locals or drive to a regional or YCS, God forbid, and then wait between rounds and all that stuff, actually like within like one day of playing at a regional, I might get like 7 rounds of Yu-Gi-Oh, but I had to lose like 12 to 16 hours of my day for it. Whereas in Master Duel, in that time, I don't have to put my shoes on and I can get like 100 duels or something in. And it's kind of weird because, like, some of what I do is just for indulgent pleasure. Mm-hmm. And Master Duel gives me more Yu-Gi-Oh! Indulgent pleasure than a YCS would. So I know that's kind of strange, and some people might hear that and just not get what I'm saying, but that's, like, how I sort of...
There's more raw Yu-Gi-Ohs.
Yeah, I just want, like, more raw reps. And also, and this is maybe similar to how you feel about, like, YCS events... I'm competing doesn't mean so much to me anymore. Like, I like playing, but like, I don't know that I need to prove myself to anyone. I just like playing.
I like competing at things. Yu-Gi-Oh is just not gonna be, I'm not gonna try and compete at Yu-Gi-Oh ever again. At least with the skills and the things that Yu-Gi-Oh wants out of a good player, I don't, it's not really something I'm great at, and nor do I want to really be good at it. There are other card games that I like competing at Digimon.
Right.
But I think Digimon, the metagame of Digimon still values things that I want to put effort into.
Yeah, like the slower pace maybe, or just the it's mechanic.
A lot of the reads, a lot of the just card economy, like, the lots of like betting and taking risks and gambles, like modern Yu-Gi-Oh, those things still exist, it's to such a significantly lesser degree. A lot of it is more just puzzle solving.
Right.
It doesn't matter really how many cards you retain or how many cards you remove. It's more about just if you solve this puzzle, your opponent will surrender. If your opponent solves your puzzle, now you have to surrender.
Yeah. I'll just finish this one off by saying, or at least for me, I'll finish it off by saying, is there a time in the future where I maybe compete in Yu-Gi-Oh! More? Low chances. But as it is now, I think that I'm satisfied where I am in Yu-Gi-Oh!
I'll play a Speed Duel tournament or an Edison tournament.
Okay.
I'll play those.
Yeah. Just not a modern. Modern's burnt you out.
Modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a lot like a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah.
I don't like Rubik's Cubes.
Okay. No, that's fair. So, why Speed Duel? Why Edison? Just in brief, you don't have to like.
They're not Rubik's Cubes. They're like, to me, they're more like chess games. And I'm not the best chess player, but I'd rather sink my teeth into a game like that than a Rubik's Cube. My opponent randomizes a cube for me and gives it to me. They know the pattern, and I have to figure it out. I hate those types of puzzles.
Yeah. I think modern Yu-Gi-Oh! Is also just, I meant to end it, but I've got one last little thing. It's a little too prickly in real life for me as well. That's one last thing is I sometimes feel like modern Yu-Gi-Oh! It's too, like, so everyone has to, like, lock in so hard that I sometimes feel like people get, like, tense and nervous and, like, rude and stuff about it. Like, in Master Duel, I can ignore that because it's just another person on the side of my screen. I can engage, but not, like, have to feel like I'm just, like, always saying, like, response, okay. Like, you know, just... Yeah, like you're walking on eggshells. But like the last time I played in like a physical tournament a couple months back, like I felt too much of that for me to like. My opponent seemed so angry with me, or so like distrusting, and just. And when I play other card games, and I haven't experienced a lot of them enough to conclusively say, but I don't get as much of that vibe. So.
Nah, I'd be like that in the game soon.
Okay, so yeah, it's not just a Yu-Gi-Oh! Thing.
It really be.
So maybe it's more, maybe it's something different. Okay, we've got just a couple more questions, and then we'll be done. So, two more, in fact. So, I play Lorcana, Yu-Gi-Oh!, Pokemon, Magic, and One Piece TCG. I'm a Yu-Gi-Oh! Main, but
Polyglot.
Yeah, okay. I'm a Yu-Gi-Oh! Main, but I tend to play the other card games from time to time to kind of take a healthy break from Yu-Gi-Oh!, which I think helps keep my Yu-Gi-Oh! Playing enjoyment. Helps keep my enjoyment playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And not feeling trapped in one card game if I don't like the current situation.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys agree? And which card games do you think like are best for taking a break?
I agree 1,000%.
Yeah. 100%. I think that, like, truthfully, I would even expand this beyond just Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, find another game to play. Because I have fallen into this trap. I still sometimes find myself feeling like this. The more you make, like, if Yu-Gi-Oh! Is your only game, it's the only thing you play, it becomes part of your identity. And it becomes really easy to, if someone insults Yu-Gi-Oh!, you're immediately angry and furious. If something's wrong in Yu-Gi-Oh!, like a card isn't reprinted or a ban list doesn't satisfy you, you're angry. Your mood and, like, your tempo, just everything is, you know, it all revolves around Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, every little change to Yu-Gi-Oh!, you're hypersensitive to what Konami does. You can't take your foot off the gas when it comes to Yu-Gi-Oh! And it's when you have other interests, other games to play. One, and this one's kind of obvious, it keeps Yu-Gi-Oh! In perspective.
Right.
As you see how other car games work and how things go. But also, it doesn't matter if Konami does something you don't like or if your last tournament didn't go so well because this week I'm playing Lorcana and that's by Ravensburger with Disney characters. We don't attack, we quest, challenge. It's a completely different game.
Yeah.
And if you get into a habit of just moving from game to game, no game can actually upset you.
Yeah, it can't hurt you and can, like, stick with you and ruin your mood. I 1,000,000% agree with this. Which game, I guess he's also asking, like, just kind of what are the differences for them that, like, they offer from Yu-Gi-Oh? I can kind of rapid fire from the little things I know. Because, I mean, you know, I don't play... Yu-Gi-Oh! Is the only card game I primarily play. I've dabbled a little in Magic. I want to kind of dabble in Digimon a bit. Off the top of my head, I can say for Magic, at least with Commander format, it feels a little more chill. The game kind of like is chill the first few turns and then it gets a little complex, but it's a nice opposite from Yu-Gi-Oh! Where it tends to start complex and then maybe if the game lingers, it can get to a simplified state. So there's that. You kind of already described the Digimon in the last question, sort of what makes Digimon better for you, but... You got more?
Yeah. So Digimon games, they take longer. If you want to sink your teeth, if you want to like sink your teeth into a game, Digimon games are fun because they, by mechanic of the game, it has to be a back and forth tempo swinging kind of game.
Yeah.
The you build your deck around like a particular monster, and like so Digimon boss monsters, they're still like key to the game, unlike in Yu-Gi-Oh where we don't use boss monsters, we have generic extra deck monsters that we go into. Mm-hmm. So if you want to be able to build around like your favorite character, that's a very doable thing in that game.
Yeah.
When it comes to like Magic, or specifically Commander, if you're a deck builder, I don't think it gets more satisfying than crafting a Commander deck. It's 100 cards. You can only have one of each card in there. And there's a lot of expression in how you build a Commander deck. Like, by the time you're done, you have crafted something. If the better of a deck builder you are, the more satisfying of a deck you can build.
Yeah, something also that's nice about some of these games, Magic's kind of got this, and Pokemon TCG actually has this too, is like, I can fucking chill when it's my opponent's turn. Like, I can take my foot off the gas. Because in Yu-Gi-Oh!, like, you're always interacting in the opponent's turn, and that's got its benefits. I am not mm-hmm. suggesting that's all bad objectively. But, like, in Pokemon, like, when I'm playing my turn, you can't do anything. Everything's turned off. And when you're playing your turn, I can't do anything. And so sometimes it's kind of nice. Like, I'm in a commander pod, and it's like, okay, I end my turn. I can just kind of, like, I can relax. Whereas, like, in Yu-Gi-Oh!, you always got to be locked in, because, like, everything is chains and, like, response and, like, you know, just the minutiae.
I mean, Magic does have cards to interact during your opponent's turn. Not every deck will use a lot of those, but they do have them.
I guess just on average, though, you're far more like hands off, at least.
Like, if I want to be.
Oh, okay. I'll say something nasty. But yeah, I agree with the question 100%. Like, you know, find some ways to take a break. Do not let this game consume your life. I promise, like, it's the best way to see outside the bubble, not get caught in the Yu-Gi-Oh trap of just like, and this isn't just like a Yu-Gi-Oh thing, like anything, like, if you only play, like, one game, no matter what it is, video game, card game, fighting game, something, anything, like, your life will revolve around it, and you have to, you know.
And playing a lot of card games this is not just say, oh, yeah, this makes the pain of Yu-Gi-Oh! Hurt less. It's you also learn to appreciate Yu-Gi-Oh! More for what it actually does differently. When you only play Yu-Gi-Oh!, you either have to love everything about it or hate everything about it. But when you play multiple card games, you can see what Yu-Gi-Oh! Actually brings to the table that other cards don't. And, yeah. You know, now you can actually say, yeah, these are the things Yu-Gi-Oh! Does well. This is why I like playing Yu-Gi-Oh! And without that perspective, you're just kind of in a, like, this weird Yu-Gi-Oh! Yeah. Cult.
It's a weird Yu-Gi-Oh! Cult. You don't get to see, you're playing it, you don't even know why you like it anymore. You almost mm-hmm. become like an undead of sorts. Like, you're, you know, to live doesn't mean you're alive type of thing. Like, yeah. Okay, final question, at least for this one. This one's a bit sad.
Okay.
How do you foresee your life's Yu-Gi-Oh! Run coming to an end, if at all? Are you going to sell a majority of your cards and just keep a few cherished ones? Maybe keep a deck for nostalgia's sake? And do you think you'll be as invested in your 40s?
No.
Okay.
I'll always have Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards. Mm-hmm. I don't have such a collection where I'm like, I need to sell all my cards. I don't have that many cards. And the cards that I do have will just end up in a box, and they will just kind of, they'll sit there forever. If somebody ever wants to play Yu-Gi-Oh, I'll bust out some cards. I'll play, but like in my 40s,
yeah.
I really hope I'm not playing Yu-Gi-Oh in my 40s. If it happens, you know, it is what it is. But like at 31, I hope not.
I know, right? Yeah, this is a kind of poignant one because actually right now I'm in a bit of a transitional phase in my life where I'm trying to really, like, not quit Yu-Gi-Oh! That's not what I'm saying. But, like, really, like, decide, you know, what's valuable to me and what's not. Mm. You guys won't believe it, but as I'm recording this podcast right now, there's somebody coming to me today to buy all of my bulk cards. And like, that's a decision that didn't come easy. We have a lot of bulk cards around here.
Yeah.
In boxes. I would, just looking off to the side, I would maybe hazard a guess at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Something about like something to the effect of about 15 to 16 boxes that hold 5,000 plus cards each. It's insane. And it's way too difficult to store, way too difficult to organize. And they just, I don't use them. They don't come up. And now that, you know, like I might be moving soon and all this stuff, I'm realizing I want to have Yu-Gi-Oh cards, but I just need what's, I just need a few decks.
Yeah, I just need the cards I just need a few actually decks. Like.
And if I ever need something for a deck, I can just order it or whatever. I might buy a pack for fun, but I don't want to just because I have a Yu-Gi-Tube channel means I need to just have 100,000 cards on my person and be Mr. Yu-Gi-Oh with all the cards. I don't need it.
Maximum deck size is 60.
So, yeah, I want to, you know, I want to not own as much, like, Yu-Gi-Oh stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I will always like Yu-Gi-Oh, and I'll still be, like, making Yu-Gi-Oh content for, you know, certainly the near-term future. But there's, like, other things. I don't know. It's weird. Like, this may be getting a bit personal. I made my YouTube channel about Yu-Gi-Oh just on a whim, actually, if you can believe it. I like cameras a lot, and I happen to have a camera and kind of, like, point it to Yu-Gi-Oh cards. But if I had pointed that camera to any of my other different hobbies or interests, then that's probably where I would be. And so Yu-Gi-Oh is not, like, top of my totem pole of interests. It's up there somewhere. But I like a lot of things. And so, you know, in that way, I don't want to see quitting Yu-Gi-Oh as, like, this just sad end of an era, like, you know, thing. But just as more of a, like, it's just one of the things I liked. And I like your example of I'll have Yu-Gi-Oh cards that are, like, probably stowed somewhere.
And I always have decks.
Yeah, like, so I'll have some decks where if somebody wants to play, I can pull out a deck and play.
I'll probably keep updating them, too.
Yeah. It's funny. I think we both kind of found our way somewhere like that, where, like, we build decks, even if we don't play them a whole bunch. We'll sort of build them and update them.
Yep.
And just, that's kind of how it is, so. Yeah. Slightly somber note to end that on, but.
But that's us emptying the pot of greed.
Yeah. So, as always, you guys can still submit questions and stuff like that for us. We will continue to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
Moving forward, we don't know what next week of the podcast will necessarily look like. We might have a slightly different setup. It might even be maybe temporarily like a remote thing because there's a lot of transitions happening under the
hood. Lots of moving around.
Yeah, a lot of moving around. But don't worry, the pod itself, the podcast is not going anywhere. The
pod of greed is safe.
We still want to do it. And in fact, if you guys have suggestions for like ways we can improve this podcast, different segments, we've considered a Patreon, things like that.
Throw it in the comments. We're going to read them all.
Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. Hopefully you enjoyed.
And we'll see you guys in the next one. Pass turn.